Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
And welcome to the Chronicles of Nannia, a nanny resource podcast made for nannies by me, a nanny. This is your host, Martha Tyler. And this week, I'm very excited. I have two wonderful guests, and we're going to be talking about storytelling and children's literature and libraries. It's just a story time wonderfulness. I can't wait. I am going to introduce Nanny Miss Monique first. Monique Dupree, I'm so glad to have you back.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me on your show.
Yes, and introducing John Light Jr. Hello, Mr. John.
Hey, how you doing? What's going on?
I'm doing very well. I'm so excited to have you here. Nanny Monique put us in touch, and I've been like looking you up, and I got to listen to some of your books be read by Monique the other day, and I just am jazzed to have you here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Yeah, Monique did a wonderful job reading my book the other day. I was so appreciative.
Yes. And actually, while we're on the subject, before we get into your backgrounds, Monique, can you give us a little bit of information about how listeners can come to your story time?
Yes. So I have a story time every Wednesday on my page, on my Instagram page, Nanny Miss Monique, at 10 a.m. Central Time. And I also do a story time on Celebrate Nanny Life at 10 a.m. Central Time every single week. And the story time lasts anywhere from about 15 to 30 minutes.
Yes, and it's so fun. It's interactive and great. My nanny kid really, really enjoyed it the other day.
Oh, that was so much fun.
Well, wonderful. Let's hear a little bit about your background, Monique, first.
So I have been a nanny for over 22 years, and I got into this literacy route from my first nanny family. They were both New York Times bestsellers, and they also were editors in magazines, and they were writers for magazines as well. So every morning when I would get the kids ready for school, they would sit in the library before the carpool came to pick the kids up. And they were always reading in the library. And I would just sit in there and say, oh my gosh, the kids were so excited to just sit down and listen to a story told by their parents. Like, they couldn't wait to finish their homework so they could listen to their parents tell a story. And I said, I want my children or my next nanny kids to always want to read a book. I love that they always were hungry for books, and that I've just been enthusiastic about literacy ever since.
Oh, I love that. Thank you for sharing. And Mr. John, tell us about your background.
Well, I am a librarian. I've worked in the library, in libraries for 10 plus years. Currently, I'm in the Youth Services Department in Prince William County. Also a storyteller, which kind of about because I was in youth services as a librarian, I had to do stories. So I decided to be a storyteller as well. And then last year? Yep, last year I became a published and I've always been a person that is very interested in family history and genealogy. And so those things that speak to me, that resonate with me, those four things, those are what Mr. John does and would do even if I didn't pay up.
Oh, I love that so much. And yeah, I feel similarly connected to like storytelling and I'm currently going into family counseling. So family in a different direction is very important to me too. And I think it's a big part of all of our stories. So I feel ya.
Yeah, my wife is also going to school for family and marriage counseling. I believe she just started. So there's a long road ahead for her and me as well, because I'm having to teach research. One of have to teach how to research. So, but it's all good though. I'll be glad, and she'll be glad when she's finished.
Yes, yes. I'm in August. I head into my internship, and I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, but it still feels far. So. But congrats. Yeah. Congrats to your wife too. That's a big first step and wonderful. And we are going to need a lot of marriage and family counselors out there.
Yeah.
So Mr. John, you're a storyteller and an author and a librarian and interested in genealogy. So story does seem really, really important to you. Can you tell us about how like story and the telling of stories has impacted your life?
Wow.
It's a big question. I know. I like to start off with big questions.
No, that's fine. I've always loved movies. Okay. So when I was growing up, we didn't have a whole lot, but my mom always, like, once cable television came on the scene, she always made sure she had cable television. And so that means she had HBO. And so I would watch TV a whole lot. And I would watch HBO. I mean, and back then HBO would play, like, you know, they would have their grand movie for the month, and they would play the movie in the morning and the afternoon. And you could just catch these movies like multiple times a month. And I just loved it. I love all this different stories. Just thinking of one, just think like a Karate, and seeing that's back on TV with the Cobra Kai series or whatever.
Right.
But like, and watching those movies and then watching them over and over again, and they always had really good storyline. They always were teaching you something, or you were learning some type of value, some type of moral thing that was going on. And I don't know, I just loved it. I just love watching TV. And so anytime I could see movies especially, cartoons, it was just something that I just gravitated towards. As far as like reading stories, when I like to tell parents when they come into the library and they'll say, you know, my want an educational and like some math or some social studies, and I'm like, okay, but what do they want to read?
Right.
You know, what they want, you want them to read. Okay, that's what we need to get. You want them to read, so we got to find something that they want to read. And I would always tell them that, you know, I didn't read these books when I was growing up. I read Sports Illustrated. Mm-hmm. And I would, you know, that was what I learned how to read on, is Sports Illustrated, and reading the stories around these games that we're playing. So it was always just kind of like, you know, storytelling going on in the things that I like to watch and the things that I like to read. So yeah, that's probably where my love of story came from.
Yeah, I love that so much. And I agree. I think that a lot of parents end up, you know, thinking that their kid needs to read academically. And I just think there's so much value in just finding something that they love. That's the bias.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a trip because I just know that wasn't what they were reading when they were growing up.
Right.
but for some reason, they get to the library and they're like, no, they need to read War and Peace and or they need to read the dictionary. Where are your dictionaries? I'm like, okay, well, we can get a dictionary, but let's also get a graphic novel or a manga. You know, let's get something that they like to read. And so it's always something that every librarian has to coach and guardians around is, you know, trying to find a balance. Okay, let them find something you read, but they also need to have something that they want to read.
Yes, yes. And Monique, what is your journey with stories and storytelling? I know you told us about your nanny families, but more personal to you, what's been your journey?
Well, as a child, I had a learning disability when I was younger. And I feel like what Mr. John just said about how the parents come in and they always want the children to read really intense these biographies. I think my parents kind of lost it there. Or, you know, my babysitter's time. And I really didn't find a love for reading until I was older, until I was in high school. And I just want children to lose themselves in stories. Mm. I want children to love to read. And I just want to encourage their love for reading. So why I think it's so important to tell these fun, engaging stories. So children they get excited about books. I want everyone to be excited about books. And now I'm excited about books as well. Not just children's books, but I try to read lots of books for myself throughout the year. And I really enjoy it. So
yes, I completely agree with that too. And yeah, I think that finding stories that you get lost in is one of the best feelings in the world. And why wouldn't you want that for your child too? The academics will happen.
That will happen, exactly.
So what can children gain in stories that might not be available to them in the, you know, quote unquote, real world?
Is that to me?
That's to anybody. Okay. But yeah, let's start with you.
Let's start with me. Story, I think what it does is it gives you, it helps build your imagination and how that could be something of substance later on in life outside of just like maybe becoming an author. But when you have an imagination, you're able to work out problems. It helps you with your critical thinking skills. It helps you to be able to think out the box or to look at something, look at a problem and look at it in different ways. Because you have that imagination, you feel like, you know, when you're looking at something, it's not just what you see. That's what I think story does for you. Also, I feel like, you know, story teach you values, teach you morals that maybe you're not gonna, if someone tells you, hey, you need to be patient, you're like, okay, like, what does that mean? I don't want to be patient. But if you tell somebody a story and you show how someone is being patient, that resonates with people better than if you just tell them what they need to do.
Yes, completely agree. And I want to hear from you too, Monique, but I did want to add that I think one of the main values that I've seen reading and I've experienced reading give to me has been empathy. It like really fosters a sense of empathy, because I've been able to now be like, I wonder what this person's story is, instead of judging, working from that place of curiosity about like, you know, they were pretty mean today. I wonder what's going on that maybe led to that. And, you know, certainly boundaries are important, but empathy is also really important. Yeah. So same question to you, Monique. What can children gain in stories that might not, you know, be immediately available to them in the real world?
Well, I think when children have diverse and inclusive books, it offers children the chance to explore the experience of themselves and others in a way they may not have seen before. So for example, like Are Your Stars My Stars by Leslie Halowski. It's a book where children are looking at colors, and it might be a child looking at the color orange in India, but the same child is looking at the color orange in the Grand Canyon and looking at the Grand Canyon, and they're experiencing colors in different places. So it gives kids to ask the question, do you see the same things that I see in the same way? It helps children realize that everyone is different and we can celebrate that. And the real world doesn't always help children see things that way.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Completely agree. Oh, I love books and stories of all kinds. And yeah, they do help us see. They help us see the world. And I feel like, you know, right now there is such isolation that having books kind of breaks that. You know, I was an only child growing up, and I read a lot because they, you know, sometimes it feels like the characters and stories are your friends. And I certainly had friends. I don't want to paint a picture like I didn't have friends, but yeah, I, you know, being an only child by nature is a bit isolating. And so I found these worlds to visit in books, and it really changed my life. So, Mr. John, you have published, am I correct? It's three books?
Yes. Three books and technically four, because one of my first book, I also published it in Spanish, but it's the same book.
Yeah, but that counts. That's four. a whole other language, that counts. So what gave you the ideas for your books? And maybe give us a little bit of background about your books.
So the first book that I published... it's called The Adventures of Joshua and Pip. And I wrote the book because I told my sons I would. my sons would ask me to tell them a story, you know, a bedtime story. So they would ask me to tell them a bedtime story. And so we would go in their room and they would get in their beds, they had bunk beds, and they'd get under the covers, and I would turn the light off and close the door so it'd be dark in there. And then I would just start telling these stories. And the first story is much like the story that I published. It was, I started off very, you know, I was, you know, I just kind of started making stuff up, and in the middle of it, I was like, okay, well, if I'm gonna tell this story, let me make sure it's something that they can learn something from it. And I finished the story. And so, you know, I don't know, maybe once a week, once or twice a week, I would tell them stories, and they would get more outlandish as we would go along. And they just loved it. And so I told them, you know, they was like, oh, Daddy, you should make this a book. And I said, well, yeah, I'm going to make it a book. And they was at school. Oh, my daddy's going to write a book. He's going to write a book about me and my brother. It's called The Adventures of Joshua and Pip. And so I was like, okay, now I got to make sure I do this thing. So one is called Adventures of Joshua and Pip, Calvin the Catfish. I used my storying knowledge. I learned how to be a storyteller while I was working at the library. The children, you know, sometimes we would have a book and the children would be interested in the book, you know, that happens. And I was like, you know what? If I could tell the story without the book, then, you know, I would be like looking in their eyes. I could see them. They could see looking into their eyes and like feed off of the story that I'm giving. So I said, okay, I'm gonna see if I can do this. And I went on YouTube and I just searched up like storytellers. Searched storytellers or storytelling. And this lady named Jan Blame, wonderful storyteller. She's in Manchester, England. She was just telling these stories. They were fantastic. I think I got it. And I practiced it a little bit at home. I said, I think I got it. One of the stories at work, during the story time, the kids loved it. And, you know, it was off from there. And so I started my storytelling career, just kind of telling stories at live story times, at senior centers, at community centers. So when it was time for me to write a book, I already had this rhythm of what a story sounds like. I had to learn more than one story. That's one of the things. But I had this rhythm or the cadence of how a story is told. And I went to go, when I wrote The Adventures of Joshua and Pip, I kept that same type of cadence. And so, like the Joshua and Pip books, they start with Once Upon a Time. And then I just kind of go through it. And so, that's how the Adventures of Joshua and Pip came about. And I wrote Calvin the Catfish the same way, making sure always trying to teach something. My first book, I was teaching critical thinking, perseverance, you know, because Joshua was trying to do something, but he kept failing, but he kept trying. I was teaching teamwork because Pip came up, he came up out and he helped Joshua, and together they accomplished the goal, and they had fun. And so, and emotions as well, because you go through a lot of emotions when you're trying to do something and it's not working. So I always want my story to teach kids something, but I also wanted to be a story too. I wanted to be fun. I wanted to be something you can get lost in.
Yeah, I love that. And then you ended up writing kind of a stylistically very different book for your third, or I guess fourth one. Can you tell us about writing for different illustrators?
Well, so when I was doing research about publishing books, I learned that most of the time when you go to a publishing company, you give them a manuscript, they accept, and then they give it to their illustrator, and you don't see it till the illustrator gives it back. Mm. And I looking for illustrators. I already had that. But at the same time, I did have a Joshua to look, and I was self-published and I hired an illustrator. I was able to have that input with the illustrator, which you normally don't have. But I wanted Joshua and Pip to look like my sons. Once I saw that that's what it was going to be like, I gave the rest of the project up to the illustrator. And, you know, because you have to let make the story their own as well. If you want your illustrations to be good, that's at least that's what I think. It was my story. He loved the story. I just wanted my sons to look a certain way. I saw that. I said, man, I told him, it's yours. Like, whatever you want to do, do it. It's yours, and I'll just see what happens at the end. It was just a similar situation. I found my illustrator on Instagram. Actually, I found both my illustrators on Instagram, actually. With the second illustrator, it was the same thing. She wanted some notes because with My Mother's Wildest Dreams, it was a different kind of book. But this time, I didn't need a certain way. And so I just wanted to give it to her. Saw what her style looked like, and I thought it would be a beautiful book. And I just gave it to her, and her does. And she made a wonderful book. As far as working with illustrators, I try to give them as much autonomy and ownership as possible, knowing that that's normally how they work. Because I'm not an illustrator, and I don't know how to make things look a certain way. If anything, I'm the only thing I'm ever probably going to want to have input in is how do I want a character to look.
Yeah, that makes total sense, but I don't know that I would have thought about it that way at all. But yes, I think that giving an illustrator as much autonomy as possible to help tell the story in their medium is smart, because I can't draw at all.
And I didn't know that just because I knew it. Like I said, I was doing research on just trying to get published, and it was just something I kept seeing as I was doing research online. And it was like, when you give that manuscript over, you don't see it until the illustrator's finished, and normally you don't have that input. So and that stuck with me. And so I don't want anybody on my shoulder trying to write it for me.
That makes sense. Micromanaging never leads to a good place in my experience.
I've been chatting with a lot of authors and illustrators, and Mel is right. A lot of the authors and illustrators, they've never met. So isn't that interesting? They write their story, the publishing company gets the story, and they give it to the illustrator, and then that's it. And they never meet each other. So it's very interesting, the whole process.
Wow. Yeah. On this podcast, I've had a illustrator and writing duo, and they were very good friends. And so my kind of first introduction to this is that because they decided, together they wanted to tell this story. And so they worked very closely together. But it's so funny that's not the norm. Because it was a lot of my experience up until this point. So thank you all for broadening my horizons.
No problem. Yeah, because that's why you see, I don't know if you look at a lot, if you follow a lot of authors, you'll see like the excitement when they receive their books. It's because they haven't seen it. They don't know what the cover's gonna look like. They don't know what if it's a children's book, they don't know what the inside is gonna look like. So that's why they are genuinely excited and to see what it's gonna look like.
Yes, that's awesome. Well, we've talked on the podcast before on Nanny Miss Monique's last episode about how there are more non-human characters. And I just laughed there, and that was out of being uncomfortable. Not that I think that this is funny. I just want clear. But we've talked about how there are more non-human characters in children's books than there are characters of color, of any color. Can you speak to why that is important for us, one, to know, and then how we can work towards fixing it? And I'm going to let Nanny Miss Monique go first on this one.
Okay, so I think in order for us to have progress and diversity, as creatives, we just need to realize that there are so many more stories to tell. And children from all over the world with different racial cultural backgrounds are more than able to talk to our kids. There's nothing wrong with animals and characters, but as I learned from my interview with Callie Bennett, she told me something it's perfect. She said, children can read books with animals in them, but it's good. They explain scary situations for children. So have you ever read the book, Sylvester in the Magic Pebble, or Wemberly Worried, where she gets lost in the forest? That's a good time to use animals in children's fiction. When it's a hard story to tell, when it's scary for children, put animals in place of people. But if we don't need animals, where it's just a story like Joshua and Pip, right? Put people of color in the story. People of color need to see themselves in books, and people need to see people of color in books.
Right. So, right. Yeah. Representation matters
on both sides.
Right.
If you're a white kid and you have books with just animals and other white children in your library, you're not seeing the world. You might have a biased attitude, and children should be able to see other children in stories that don't look like them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, completely agree. Yeah, Mr. John, I'd love to hear your thoughts too.
Yeah, it's interesting because recently it is now becoming, to now have children of color on the cover and in a book. I can add a publication that comes out that has just like upcoming books or whatever. It's called I think it's called the Horn Book. And it was probably in like November or December, and this Horn Book came across, and this is like after after 2020, when there's a big push to get people of color on books and to listen to people of color. And I looked at this book, and on this little magazine, on the cover, it was, a child of color. And so then I started flipping through the pages, and every book had a child of color on it. Probably for the first 25 pages, every book had a child of color on it. And I was looking at some of the names of the books, and they were just regular books. And I was just thinking, then now we're thinking again about the whole illustrator situation with the author and the illustrator, how the author doesn't have much input. Illustrators could have been illustrating children of color all of this time. Right. There are so many books that come out that aren't about history. They're aren't about anything in real life. It's just a situation happening, and we're looking at the situation play out. And most of the time, the characters would be white characters. And it's not like, they live in a certain place. There is more white people than it is people of color. Like, no, it's just a regular place, a regular make-believe place with make-believe things happening or real things happening, but they were just using white characters. But they could have been illustrating children of color all along. And now they are starting to illustrate children of color more. There was this book, I forget the name of it, but the book is about what you do in a hurricane. And I'm looking at this book, like I saw the Horn book, and then the second day I saw this book. And I was looking at the book and I was like, you know what? That family, more than likely that would have been a white family 10 years ago, 5 years ago. That would have been a white family going through a hurricane situation, figuring out what you do during a hurricane or a storm, and then clean up. How do you pick up and clean up after a hurricane or storm? I mean, that was the book. And right. It was like, wow, like they could have been doing this all along, but they just weren't doing it. And the reason, I don't know what the reason is. I'm not going to try to figure out what the reason is per se, but they weren't doing it. And right. They could have been doing it. And so, yeah, it's people need to see themselves. People need to see themselves. And we need to see a true representation of our nation, of our reality. We need to see who's out there, because we see them in real life every day. So why? Well, you know, you should be able to see the same things when you're reading your books as well.
Yes, yes. And I am excited that it is shifting away from just the default being white, you know, like that now people are making the default more diverse, you know, like it's not necessarily that, you know, she's like, if you picture a child, that you're not necessarily anymore just picturing a white child. And I think we still have a long way to go, but I'm really heartened to hear about that magazine, right? That you were talking about new books. That's exciting.
Oh yeah. I'm like, you know, they don't want to be on the wrong side of history.
Right.
But it's like, I'm glad it's happening now, but at the same time, you're always, well, why did it take till 2020 before we started to do this?
Right. So we could have been doing it for so long since we've had children's books.
Yep. Could have.
Yeah. Well, kind of along that same vein, we are now in Black History Month, and I know that there's this tendency, kind of back to the beginning of our conversation, to want to push during Black History Month, to want to push histories and biographies and those types of stories. And I think that is wonderful. We need to know, we need to learn about our history. We need to know about it. But I'm curious about your ideas of a wider range of stories to bring diversity into your kiddos' lives. And we'll start with Monique on this one.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think it's great that we're seeing more fictional stories being developed that honor representation and allow children to imagine worlds where they can see characters who look like them doing things that defy the norms. But let's also remember that we have people of all backgrounds, colors, shapes, mm-hmm. making history and doing amazing things every day. So you begin to see children's books that reflect that. So some of the books that I've been reading to my daughter lately are fictional books that are loosely based on current events, like now hiring the White House dog. Have you guys read that one? So it's about, yes, it's like Sasha and Malia, and they wanted to pick their own dog. And do you remember when they were picking out a dog? It was like a big deal at the time.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, but a fictional story about that. And I think that's great. So you can pick out books that are like that. Also, there's another book called Kamala and Maya's big idea. Have you heard of that one?
No, I haven't. I love talking to you, Monique, because I get so many good book ideas.
They aren't necessarily telling history, but they do allow children to connect with people they can identify with. And so those are great stories. So they're not necessarily talking about the struggle, right? But we're learning, because that requires like the child to ask a question like, oh, well, who is that? Who is Sasha Malia? Is Kamala? And that I think I love that. That's a different approach to telling history without actually talking about the struggle.
Yes, I love that too. I ran across a list today, and Mr. John, I want to hear your answer too. But I ran across a list today of movies to watch for Black History Month that are not about Black trauma, and I really thought that that was important, because yes, it is important to learn about our history, but there are also so many moments of joy and just everyday living that we also should be sharing as communities with each other. So I love that those kind of like twists on history are really lovely. Mr. John, I'd love to hear your thoughts too. How can you, especially as a librarian, you know, if a parent is feeling stuck, you know, in that green eggs and ham rut, how can they help break out of that and explore some new books?
Well, I mean, I guess first back to that question where you're not reading books about that are biographical or historical. When I wrote my books, that was another one of the reasons why I wanted to write the book, was because I wanted to find regular stories with characters that looked like my sons.
Right.
I wasn't trying to find, you know, the history books. The Rosa Parks books and like those books are, but that wasn't what I was looking for. I mean, and most of the, you know, the books that are in the library is like fiction, it's fictional stuff. It's fictional content. But I couldn't find any of them, or I couldn't find many that looked like my sons. And so that was one of the reasons why I published my books, why I wrote and published the books, because I wanted to help with that issue. I think that it's, and in order to, and I guess in order to fix that, I think people need to feel empowered to write their stories, whatever the stories are. You know, let people use their imagination and be able to write whatever stories they want and make them look the ways that they want to. And then you'll start to get a more diverse selection of books. So encouraging people to write and encouraging people to put their stories out on the shelf. One of the reasons that I wanted to self-publish was because I didn't want to wait for someone to tell me that my story was good enough. Right now I might want to be published, but when I first, you know, started to do it, I was like, I can't wait for someone to say this is a good enough story and we're going to get behind it. Like, no, I need to get this out on the shelf now so that I can say that I've done my part. Like, I'll worry about trying to get published later, but I just wanted it to be something that is just fun. And not, you know, not a biographical story, certainly not a story about slavery. Like, it's so many books about, you know, you said about trauma. I was there trying to think, you said movies without trauma, and I was sitting there thinking about all of my favorite movies and being like, okay, I can't pick that one.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. But at the same time, a lot of stories involve trauma. So
And
the type of books that I like reading on my own are biographical books. But this is like for me, not for kids. But for me, I like to read biographical books. I like to read, or I like to watch movies that about other people's experiences. And I mean, like, you know, different areas, you know, people in the South, people on the West Coast, people, you know, in the North, wherever. And so normally when you're watching any type of movie or reading anything about other people, there's going to be some trauma in there. So, cause you know, trauma is part of life, but I get what you were saying about that movie list. Cause I'm like, man, there's a whole lot of trauma in all of the movies that I like. Right. But yeah, but people have to feel empowered to tell their own story, have to feel empowered and know that there's a way to do it. Maybe they even need to be shown how to do it. And so I am appreciative of the self-publishing options that are out there that are making it easier and removing the barriers for publishing your story. You know, Amazon makes it very easy for you to put a book out. All you got to do is write it and then upload it, and your book is out. It may not get sold or whatever, as many as you want, but you can get your story out, you know, in an instant. All you got to do is write it. So I do appreciate that about the self-publishing options out there. And people just need to know if they get their stories out and let people know about it, and they'll see how many people have been waiting to hear the story that they had to share.
Right. Yeah. And I also, when you're talking about self-publishing, I also think about, I wonder if that's part of this shift that we're seeing, is that it wasn't always so easy. And not to say that it is currently easy to self-publish. I'm in no way trying to diminish. There are still barriers and difficulties, but I think that there used to be a lot more gatekeepers. Publication.
Yeah, and it's the same way with music now. Mm-hmm. You know, you used to had to wait on someone to believe in you in order to get your music out. But now those barriers have been removed. All you need now is the equipment to make the music, and then you can upload it to Spotify, to all of these different places, and your music is out into the universe. So, if you want to invest in yourself, it's pretty easy to self-publish. The main barrier for self-publishing is your desire to finish your work and pay the money that it takes to get it self-published. And I think with Amazon, it's like free to be. I'm not necessarily trying to be an Amazon commercial,
right?
But the But just the barriers have been removed significantly. It's really on us as individuals to believe that someone wants to hear your story and just go about putting it out there.
I love that. If nannies and or kids are listening who, you know, kids love writing stories and they're so good at it. Do you have any advice for kids who love to write stories and maybe want to work towards being an author someday?
Write, and finish. Finish what you're writing.
Yes.
So write and finish. That was the main thing that kept me back from being an author a lot sooner. Is I would start writing something and I would get maybe 2 pages in or 3 pages in, and then I'd just be like, okay, I don't feel like writing it no more. And I think maybe also that had a lot to do with, as I think I was always trying to write like a novel or something like that. And then I started figuring out, you're like, you know what? You don't really want to write a novel. You probably don't really want to write a short story. Writing these picture book stories is like, oh, that's like just right. It's like, it's, you know, that I have the capacity to do that. So I guess try different methods of writing. Try to write poetry, try to write, you know, short fiction stories, or if you like to write longer, just keep writing, but finish. You gotta finish your project, whatever it is, your writing project. You need to finish it. So there is a feeling that comes over you. I don't really understand it, but when you finish something, you're like, oh, you can breathe, and there's that sense of accomplishment that, oh my goodness, like I wrote a story. And so now you feel more capable to move on to the next step. And when you know, oh, I finished this. And so finish your story, write a story and finish it. Cause you can write anything. You can write anything down and then you can just go back and edit it, go back and edit it out later, which is something you need to do, by the way, also. Yes. When you write a story, is you need to go back and really take out a lot of the stuff doesn't need to be in there, or add things that do need to be in there, like imagery and stuff like that. But finish. And once you start to finish, you know, I can have a bunch of stories laying around finished and not try to do anything with them. I was writing my third Adventures of Joshua and Pip book. Mm-hmm. And I was in the middle of reading it. I took a break from writing it, and then I was thinking about my family tree, and I was thinking about the mothers in my family tree, and I turned the page on the notebook, and I just started writing about the hopes and dreams and aspirations that mothers, that I believe the mothers in my family had for their children. And I wrote this poem / story, and I looked at it again. I took some stuff up and I finished it, and then I left it on the table. And when I went to work the next day, and my wife sent me a text, she said, oh, I like that poem you wrote about mothers. And I was like, huh? What you talking about? She was like, the poem you wrote about mothers on the table. I'm like, oh, I was like, you like that? And she was like, yeah, I liked it. And so after I heard that, I came back home that night. I finished writing the third Joshua and Pip book. And so I had both of these projects or whatever finished. And I was like, well, man, I got to publish these now. Yeah. I got to get them published. But my wife said, you can only publish one. Because it costs a little bit of money to publish them. And, you know, to get them illustrated and everything. And so, and that's how I decided to go about publishing My Mother's Wildest Dreams. But, you know, again, if I hadn't have finished it, then it would still just be in my notebook somewhere. It wouldn't be out here. So try to finish as many projects as you can.
Yeah, that's really wonderful advice. Monique, I'm curious because you've interviewed so many authors. Do you have advice for listeners or kids? Yeah, who are interested in it?
So I think kids are doing amazing things all over the world right now. And there is no doubt in my mind that if a kid wants to write a story or a book, there is nothing that can stop them. And one place that I've known throughout my career is the Young Authors Program. Do you guys have that, Mr. John, in Virginia, Young Authors?
We probably do, but I haven't heard of it, though.
So, Young Authors Program through Crimson Sparrow Publishing House. It's a great program, and it teaches children how to write stories, and they work with a publisher. And I know Chicago Public Schools and a lot of the private schools in Illinois have Young Authors Programs. So it's by district. So all the kids in the entire school, this story, they want to, it's optional. And they choose the best story from the school each grade. And then those kids compete against all the kids in the district. So they're all winning. And then one person wins from Illinois. And I believe they compete with other states as well that are also in the Young Authors program. And those kids get their book published. And they pay. Yes, isn't it? That's I remember I did Young Authors when I was in the sixth grade. I didn't win or anything, but I wrote and illustrated my own book and I illustrated it. Yeah, I illustrated it myself.
Amazing.
You ahead of the game.
Well, I was so proud of it. And I actually was like a little bit of a sore loser. So when I didn't win, I was like, Mom, I don't want to do it again next year. I remember that. But I encourage a few of my nanny kids to write in Young Authors. And one of my kids won his district.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Yes. And they had to go down to Bloomington, Illinois for the convention where he was competing for state. He didn't win for state, but he had a really cute story. He was in the second grade and he had an adorable story about a little boy who met a robot.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's one thing. And any kid can do Young Authors. You don't have to, you know, your school doesn't have to do the program. You can look it up and just submit your book.
Wonderful. Yeah. That's a great tip. And I also would think that having deadlines and things might help you finish if that's part of your struggle. To finish things, I know deadlines help me.
Look, and I was gonna say that it helped me because I told myself I'm gonna have this book written by I think it was November. I said I'm gonna have this book written before the end of November, and so I was writing that book November 30th at 11:10 at night.
Yes,
I got it finished.
Yes. Another resource for nannies who might be new to the podcast, there is an episode about it. The Story Pirates you can submit stories that children have written to the Story Pirates, and they select some and turn them into basically radio plays. And so that's a really cool way. So they kind of turn them into audiobooks for kids. So that's a cool way to hear your words performed. If a kid that you know is into storytelling, which
is so cool.
Yeah.
And Martha, I had the opportunity to meet this woman who does a podcast called Stoop Kids Stories. Stoop Kids Stories. S-T-O-O-P, Stoop Kids Stories. It's on all of the podcast places on iTunes, Apple Podcasts or whatever. These stories are great. Nice. There's like an audio book. You're listening to them, but it has, you know, since she's like in the performing arts, so she's able to kind of like create these real world sounds from time to time to make it seem like it's like a real, you know, almost like an old time like radio.
Yeah, Foley work.
Or if you ever heard of The Adventures in Odyssey.
No,
that's like a radio show that people used to live. It still comes on, okay. But it's a kids radio show called The Adventures of Odyssey. It reminds me of that, except this one is called Stoop Kids Stories. Oh my goodness, they are awesome. And probably up to, let's see, that's, I would say, you know, kindergarten up to about third grade. Just wonderful, wonderful stories. You sit there, you can listen to them. You have your nanny kids and you want them to hear a story, you can put it on And it'll probably go about, you know, 25, maybe 30 minutes, but they'll be into it. It's wonderful.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much. And I also think for nannies out there who have kids who, I think we see it sometimes where kids start to lose their desire to tell stories, or they think that they're not doing it right, that perfectionism sneaks in. I think one of the best ways to combat that is to expose them to diverse stories and these different mediums of storytelling. I think that surrounding children with stories is never going to be a bad thing.
Yeah.
Yes, so, I agree.
Yeah. So Mr. John, you are a librarian, and as a nanny, I love librarians. what advice do you have for nannies who want to get the most out of their local libraries for their nanny kids and for themselves?
I would say go in and talk to the youth services staff, the supervisor, librarian, whoever's in youth services, and just talk to them and tell them what you want. Tell them what you think your child or your child wants or needs, and they will give it to you. I mean, that's what librarians do. What librarians are here to empower the community, to give the community whatever it is they think they need in order to be successful. So, you know, whatever it may be, I would go in there and I would say, you know, may I speak the services supervisor or someone in youth services or teen service, or who, you know, depending on, you know, what they have there, and tell them what it is you would like to see. You know, can you get some authors in here so that we can do, so my child can meet authors? Can you do more STEM crafts and activities? Can you watch movies? Can we have like a movie day here at the library with my you know, my children can come in? Or, you know, I know we're virtual now, so you might want to, you know, you say, hey, you know, could you have virtual story time? We do what you ask us to do. So if you want, you know, if you want to have impact, just come and talk to us and let us know what it is, and we'll do it, because we just want you all to be engaged, and we want you to appreciate the services that we can provide. So we try to get information, and a lot of times the information we get are from people who come to the library more, you know, most often. And so we don't always get to the people who don't get to the library. And so we have to try to figure out what it is that, you know, people who aren't coming need. But if you see, if you're not seeing something you want, come and let us know and you will get it.
That's amazing advice. And I actually hadn't thought about that. At first I thought you meant that they'll help you find the book you need.
We'll do that too.
Yes. Which I figured was part of it, but I didn't even think about asking for, you know, author talks or things like that. That's a wonderful idea.
Yeah. If you want to have like Legos, or, I mean, whatever it is, because we want to be the hub of the community. That's what all libraries want to be. We want to be the hub of the community, a place where everybody in the community can come and get what they need. And so, yeah, I mean, yes, you know, we're going to help you find a book if you want to find a book. You know, different types of books, whatever that is. If there's books that you don't see in the library that you think the library should have, let us know, and we will order them. And I mean, 90% of the time, as long as the book is fairly new, the library will order it for you. And they'll probably order at least three to six copies of the book. And so now you can have that book in your community for, you know, for as long as the book is, you know, is in good condition. So that's another thing that you can do as well. If you're not seeing this type of books that you want to see, if you want to see more foreign language books, come in, let if you have a list, hey, I want to see more books that look like this. Can you order this book? And we'll do it. We will.
Amazing. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, and Monique, I would love to hear your tips about the library too, because I know that you find such wonderful books. Every time I talk to you, I get a new list that I go look up.
I go to the library often, like it's once a week. So
yes.
So for nannies, I would say introduce yourself and your child to the librarian. That's number one. And it should be a fun time to go there, just as much as it is to go to a toy store or their favorite place to eat. The library should invoke that same feeling. I really want kids to be excited about going there. And it all starts knowing your local branch and your librarian, have him or her showing you where to find the latest and greatest in that library. So.
Yes.
You have to do.
I love it. Wonderful. Today, I actually took my nanny kid to the library today to get some new books. And she saw one of her books on the shelves, like one of the books that she owns. And it blew her mind. She was like, Marsa, look. She was like, When Aang Becomes a Brother, which is a great book. If you all have not read it, it's about a little trans boy. And it's very, very good. I enjoy that book a lot. And so whenever she wants to read it, I'm game for it. Yeah. Well, wonderful. Well, is there anything else that you all would like to talk about? Anything that we didn't get to yet?
Well, I just want to give a big shout out to my nanny friends who support me and support great authors like Mr. John. And I, each and every one of the people that helped me. And I'm so happy we're in 2021. And it's been an honor and a pleasure to get to know Mr. John. And it's such an inspiration. To everyone, I'm so glad that I've met him, and I love your new book, Mr. John. It's amazing.
Thank you.
I really loved it too. I gotta get my own copy of it. And speaking of, where can listeners find out more about you? Find out how to get your books. All of that good stuff.
So I have a website. The website is www.theylivedhappily.com. So, you know, like they live happily ever after,
right?
It's theylivedhappily.com. And there you can get in contact with me. You can, you know, learn a little bit about me. You can, you know, also purchase the books there. All of my books are also on Amazon, bookshop.org, Barnes and Noble. If you have Instagram, I'm on Instagram as Mr. John. _TLHEA, and that stands for They Live Happily Ever After. They Live Happily Ever After is the name of my business. So that's what that stands for. And just follow me.
And don't you do visits to school, virtual visits?
I did a virtual visit a couple weekends ago for the Jack and Jill organization. I stated to do an author visit in California, so obviously virtual, February the 19th. And so, yeah, you know, anyone that wants to have me come over and do some storytelling or do a story time, or if you need help with genealogy, I do that as well. They can go to my website and you'll send me a message and we can get started on that as well.
Wonderful. And yes, Mr. John is so kind, so get in touch.
I love meeting people. And I love meeting people and getting to know people. I have a interview series that I do on Instagram called the Who I Am interview series. And I've been having so much fun with it because I just get to know people and I get to listen to people tell their story. Because again, I'm a storyteller. I'm a story collector as well. I love to hear stories. I love to hear how people live their lives and what type of culture they're in. Because, you know, we can be very similar in ways, but we are also brought up in so many different circumstances and we all go through so many different things. And so I love hearing people's stories. And I do the interview series, I send out a questionnaire, and the questionnaire has about 20 questions on it. And, you know, some of the questions are like, these are questions that you're asking yourself. What do I value the most? Why am I unique? What challenges have I overcome? And just hearing people answer those questions and hearing the stories on why they answered the way they did, it's wonderful. And you just get to know so many people. There's a guy on Instagram named Mr. LaMotta, and Storytime with Mr. LaMotta is his handle. He's from Zambia, but when he answered the question for what's your favorite type of music, and he was like, well, you know, I love reggae and I love this and I love that, but my favorite type of music is country music. And I'm like, what? He was like, yes. He was like, when we were growing up in Zambia, they didn't get that many stations. And so one of the stations that his parents would have it on was the country music station. And whenever the country music station was on, he said he had a certain type of peace that he always felt when that music was on. And so it just carried over. And so that's his favorite kind of music, is country music. And I'm like, it blew my mind. So it's like, you never know. You can't look at somebody and be like, oh, they're this type of way. Oh, wait. Oh, he said he's from Africa. Oh, so he must like this. No. You have to talk to people and get to know people and hear stories to truly get to know who someone is.
Amazing. Yeah, that's so funny. I have a former nanny kid who loves country music so much. And he moved with his family and went to a local radio station and like talked to them. And he impressed them so much with his knowledge of country music. They gave him once a month, he does a little like 15 minute spotlight special on the radio station now.
Wow. Are you serious?
Yeah. He's amazing. And like he picked out this past, I do not remember the artist's name because I was born and raised in Tennessee and I went in the other direction of like, I get me away from country music because it's all I hear. But he highlighted someone who pointed out the history and was like, it's important for us to see the diversity in country music too. And it was just really interesting. I learned a lot from him, as I always do from kids.
I like to say, do love and love what you do. And so, yeah, he loves what he's doing right now.
He does. Nanny Miss Monique, where can listeners find you and find out more about you?
They can find me on Instagram at Nanny Miss Monique and Facebook at Miss Monique. You can also go to nannymissmonique.com. I also make resumes for nannies and do promotional videos as well. And I also do an interview series every Thursday at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. Today I interviewed Susan Gall. She is a wonderful illustrator. She used to work for Disney, and now she's a full-time children's book illustrator. She's amazing.
Oh,
so yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, and all of those websites and Instagram handles will be down in the show notes for you. So if you're listening and you are driving or doing dishes or, you know, living your life and don't have time to stop and write it down, they're down in the show notes linked. So just click on them and they'll take you there like magic. Wonderful. Well, we end each episode with a cute, funny story. And Nanny Miss Monique, I would love to hear yours.
Okay. So I told Mr. John the story the other day, and I wasn't going to, he's laughing, but I'm going to say it. It's kind of funny. So my daughter and I were in the car with my sister, and we were listening to an audiobook, and my sister asked my daughter, we were listening to the book Pinkalicious, and I'm sure you guys are familiar with the book Pinkalicious, where the little girl eats. Yes, the little girl eats the cupcakes and she turns pink. And my sister said, "Do you want to be pink just like Pinkalicious?" And my daughter said, "No, I don't want to be pink. I want to be black, because she associates the pink with money." The little girl took the cupcakes in the middle of the night and she turned pink. So if you and she knew that if she wasn't going to take the cupcake, she's just going to remain the cupcake that she is, which is black. So
I love that.
Yes, indeed.
Yep, she told her. I love that. I love that so much. Thank you for sharing. Mr. John, I'm just curious, do you have a story? Like a fun, cute little story?
Yeah, see, Monique told me you was gonna do this.
I did. Yep, like, she knew. She's been on my show before. She knew what was up.
I was like, oh, okay, I gotta think of something. Then I didn't think anything until just now. So I have twin boys, and we were living with my in-laws when they were one-ish, two-ish. And so we lived in the basement, and the basement steps were carpeted. And so one day we had some people came over to the house, family, friends. They were over the house, and the boys were running around on the, you know, the main floor. And so we told them, like, go downstairs, go to the room. And so when they went to the stairs, all you heard was boom, 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 boom. And the people that were there were like, "Oh my God, is everything okay?" And like, we were standing around like, "Oh, they fine. They was just going down the stairs." And they was like, "What do you mean? Like, I heard all this noise." And it was like, "We sorry." Like, so they slide down the stairs on their bellies. That's how they go downstairs. And so that's how they went downstairs all the time. They would go down on their bellies and it would just be like, boom, 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 boom. And then they'd get to the bottom and run off and go do what they was doing. And so, yeah, it scared those friends of ours, but, you know, it was something that we were used to, so.
I love that. I love creative ways of getting around. That's amazing.
It was crazy. It was crazy. I was like, what are they doing? Like, who even taught you how to do this? They just started doing it on their own.
Oh, yeah. Kids will explore lots of different ways. That's amazing. Thank you for sharing. I really appreciate it. Mr. John, Miss Monique, thank you all both so much for taking time to talk to me tonight.
Oh, thank you for having us on your show.
Yes, thank you very much. I had a good time. Wonderful conversation.
Me too. And thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
The Chronicles of Nania is produced and hosted by Martha Tyler. Artwork by Noni Blastodon. Theme music by Brad Kemp. Find him at secondbedroomstudios.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chronicles of Nania and on Twitter at Nania Podcast. To contact us, email chroniclesofnania@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
This show has been brought to you by Machine Culture.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.